Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Nerdcast here on Project Nerd, brought to you by the Eon Podcast Network. Iggy here presenting to you a very special episode. I get to say it again, mainly because Tyler's not here, but also because I'm bringing you three awesome interviews from our own Jesse back at Denver Comic Con 2016. So stay tuned, enjoy the interviews, and join us next week for another normal episode of the Nerdcast.
This is Jesse Wynn from Project Nerd coming at you straight from Denver Comic Con 2016. And I'd like for you all to please welcome a exceptionally kind gentleman and an amazing artist that I've had the pleasure to get to know just this year, Mr. Dave Swartz. How are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great, man. Doing great.
This is wonderful. How's the weekend been for you? Is this your first year in Denver?
Yeah, it's actually the first year doing the Denver Comic Con. I've been to Colorado before, but It's actually the first time I've been here. I actually was lucky enough to get one of the lottery spots.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah, I actually didn't make the cutoff, but I put in my name and lucky enough, I got picked.
So you win, everybody wins.
Yeah, I thought it was a win-win for everybody.
That's super. That's absolutely wonderful. What a luck of the draw, literally.
Right,
I got to see such a wonderful book. Before I jump in, how long have you been going around to conventions?
Actually, not very long. Last year was the first year that I really came out with a full issue. Mm-hmm. The previous year before that, I came out with a small preview issue. It was only about 6 or 7 pages, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I've only really been doing it for about a year now. And
wow.
this year I did, I'm going to be doing 6 total. Next year I hope to be doubling that number.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah, that's how it's been going for me so far.
How's this year been? Have you been getting reception on your title?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's Friday was, you know, actually exceptional. I thought that it was going to be slow, but it wound up being a great day. Yesterday was absolutely insane, as it always is at a con. But today has been surprisingly busy. We've had a lot of traffic with the book and a lot of traffic with commissions as well, which was really nice to see.
Absolutely. You have a nice way that drew me in at first. It's your nice bright gold and black. Commissions.
Right,
stick out really well in the sea of rainbow colors that surround it.
Yeah, I definitely wanted to, when I first started, I wanted to try something that was a little different, something that no one's really done before, or at least many people haven't tried before.
Absolutely.
So, I thought it definitely kind of grabs people's eyes. So
it does, and your booth is really exceptionally well put together. It's a very tasteful. I've honestly never seen anything like this before, especially for an artist.
Well, thank you. I am a stickler for branding, so I wanted to make sure that I created an experience at the table rather than just putting my artwork up on the table. So I kind of created, just a scene that I thought would be reflective of the character and as he trains to become the superhero, what he might keep around him. So.
Wow. That's really brilliant. I noticed there was a theme, but not having read the comic, I couldn't immediately absorb that was the inspiration.
Sure.
But I could see it's very classy. There's a lot of gold tones that accentuate your art.
Mm-hmm.
And then your big banners behind us, are these three main characters from your comic?
Yep. Gaia, Atlas, and Chaos. Atlas is obviously the main character, but he's flanked on either side by Gaia and Chaos, who both represent polar opposites of the scale of good and evil. So Gaia is sort of the physical embodiment of all positive and loving emotion, whereas Chaos is the opposite. And both of them sort of just are on a never-ending, infinite battle for power in the universe. So the scales are turning in Gaia's favor, so she needs a little help to push the forces of chaos back, and that's where Atlas comes in.
Wonderful. I accidentally buried the lead. The book that you've brought with you to Comic-Con this year, I'm going to edit this if I'm wrong, Atlas Obscura?
Atlas Origins.
Origins. God, I don't know
it's
why.
It's okay. It's been a long weekend,
I'm
but it's
super
been a long.
Honest,
just think it's his origin story.
Yeah, it's me being Sunday fried.
Exactly,
I super
dude.
Apologize.
I hear you. No, my hand is fried, I'll tell you what.
Atlas Origins. That's super not hard at all.
Well, in the second series is going to be called Atlas Corruptions. So it's actually the origin story of chaos. So it's sort of the flip side of it.
It's exciting to see that you've thought that far ahead, because I try to talk to authors when they're maybe on the second or third comic, or if I'm really lucky, it's maybe the second trade paperback they're working on.
Right.
And it always seems like when, even if you haven't plotted it out exactly, if you have the really big picture in your head of what this person's life amounts to, then you're not, firstly, it feels much more natural, and it doesn't feel like you're retconning things in, because I've definitely read an issue one of a comic and come back, and issue number two and three seems like they're lying to me, and a bunch of things didn't happen in number one that they want me to think did.
Exactly. Yeah, when I approach my stories, I do want to approach them with the future in mind, you know. So
absolutely.
I don't want to have to get myself into a situation where I have to be incredibly clever or just incredibly lucky,
absolutely,
you know, to make it sound natural. So with all the other stories that I'm writing right now, I do have either longer goals for them,
absolutely,
or I know exactly what each issue is going to be. So I've done a lot of planning. It's just a matter of getting it done now.
That's super exciting on my end to hear.
Thank you. I love that.
Oh, absolutely. So is this the first comic that did you write this as well as illustrate this?
Yes, actually. This is the first story that I fully illustrated myself. I have done other illustrative stories for other writers. I've done short stories with other writers. But this is the first time that I've written my own story and illustrated it.
Before you took the risk to write and illustrate your own book, which is a whole series of questions I might need to ask, because that's always really, really scary. Reaching for your dreams.
Oh yeah.
What was keeping the bills paid while this was mulling around in your head originally?
You know, I first came up with this story concept probably about 6 or 7 years ago. It was quite a long time ago. But when I was writing it, I was actually working at a marketing company. I was doing primarily work for automotive dealerships, so I was in charge of branding. And I would, make sure that all the artwork that we put out from the art department was on par with what we had done before, if not better.
Wonderful.
And, that definitely helped me sort of just propel myself into, doing something more entrepreneurial like what I'm doing now.
Absolutely. That's really wonderful. What do you feel like maybe one of the most important things you got, either skills or lessons you learned from working in like corporate advertising for years and years that has helped you out the most in taking this endeavor on headfirst?
I think the one thing that's really helped me the most is probably the way that I go about a marketing plan. Because I guess before I wouldn't have necessarily known where to even begin. So when I worked at this marketing company, we went through thorough planning meetings where we would work with clients and really get to the heart of what they wanted to convey. And so through that training, it really helped me when I sat down to do the same thing for my book, to figure out exactly how I would best allocate my time, best allocate my money, and hopefully get the best return for my investment.
Absolutely. So it's really wise of you to think about it that way, because when you are very passionate and you're taking a risk to do something you care about and that you love, thinking clearly about the business aspect and not just I'll put in 110%.
Right.
It's a really positive perspective to keep.
Right.
So you keep yourself sane and financially safe while also giving as much as you possibly can, very focused on the one thing that you care about.
And that
seems to be the hardest part, is to make sure you don't let your life go by the wayside and you keep your responsibilities in check while also spending all of your time to funnel it in and focus it on one thing.
Absolutely.
And did it impact your social life a little bit for a while?
Well, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, I think there were many, many weeks there where I worked, from 7 o'clock in the morning until 1 o'clock, the next morning, one of the other reasons why I made this transition is because I believe that I should want to, go to work every day.
Absolutely.
And, I should also be able to, get my job done with enough time to enjoy my social life. So I really want to pursue both of those goals at the same time. And both of those, if they're not met, to me, it's not a success. So
that's really inspiring to hear, because you have a very... You have a good head on your shoulders,
and I
appreciate seeing the focus on what is really important in your life, and that I hope that anybody who gets to listen to this, or more, even more special, is if someone gets to meet you at a con, that they're not afraid to come up and talk to you about being
absolutely.
An artist or what it means to be independent, and especially being an artist and writer. That seems like a really heavy responsibility.
Right, absolutely.
If there is an answer to this, does your writer mind or your artist mind boss the other around a little more?
You know, it's funny. I have had that question asked of me a couple times. And the answer I usually give is, as a writer, I find that the artist typically bullies the writer around. When I sit down to write a story, I usually write it with the art in my head. So I do not usually write a page without knowing exactly how I'm going to draw the panel first.
Wow.
Which is a lot different than how usually writers approach these types of stories. So,
absolutely.
But then I can honestly say, when I get into the art phase, when I'm actually done with the writing and I begin to put pen to paper, I will find myself sometimes going, you know what, I'm going to change that because I think this just is going to look better or going to work better. And I find myself editing the story a little bit as I go, which is not something that most artists get to do.
Yeah.
A comic book
That's a positive, good symbiotic relationship you have with you and yourself.
Exactly.
You're a lucky guy.
Right. Exactly. So, and it's been a great experience, but I will say, coming up in the next couple months, I'm going to be working on some other stories with other artists.
Oh, so, very
I'm
cool.
I'm going to try to be collaborating with other. I know right now, for sure, I'm going to be working with Joseph Cooper. He's done some work with DC and Marvel.
Wonderful.
We're going to be trying to work on a project together. We've got probably two or three other ones that I'm trying to get some artists slotted in for. I'll still be doing some other work myself, but I just really want to try to get something out there, get something published, and see what happens.
Did you self-publish this book, or how did you go about getting this in front
absolutely.
Of us?
Absolutely. The first one here is all self-published myself. I went through a local printer. I'm actually from the Michigan area.
Oh,
wow. So I went through a local printer out there. It's actually worked out really well. I first printed the first issue through Kickstarter.
Oh, wow.
And that was to just try to get it out there, see what people thought of the story.
To everybody and myself, we all miss this Kickstarter. Holy moly.
Right. I just recently ended the Kickstarter for the paperback collection, which is all six issues together. So that ended about a month ago, and it was very successful.
That's awesome.
We surpassed our goal by hundreds of dollars, so it was
fantastic.
That's
amazing. So what drew my eye was immediately drawn to the aesthetic of this whole table. And
well, thank you.
Thinking about it consciously now, speaking to you, it now seems like a proactive choice to unify a brand and have an aesthetic design to the whole table.
Right.
But at first it was just pleasing and I didn't think about it and I didn't notice it. And kind of spending a little bit more time, I'm interested in what were either some aesthetic inspirations or what time period might you be drawing from? Because
sure.
This seems, I see a little bit of modern day, but there's a lot of very epic, heroic posturing. A lot of it has deep symbolism of gods and very powerful creatures.
Absolutely.
And I'm fighting very hard not to compare it to my favorite comic. So what were some of your inspirations for either the world or the aesthetic that the comic that brings?
Sure. The comic story itself is primarily inspired by ancient knowledge, Eastern philosophy, fringe science. Things that are very challenging to general conceptions of what reality in the universe are, really just kind of exploring big questions in life. And, I took a lot of inspiration from Buddhism. I took a lot of inspiration from African art because the temple that he trains in is set in Africa. So I kind of wanted to mix those two aesthetics together. That's kind of where the old worldy gold sort of style comes into play. I take a lot of inspiration from animation and minimalism. I'm a simpleton. I was always taught in college that, if you can't get it done simply, you're not doing your job right. So as an illustrator, I want to try to get the message across or the illustration across or the illusion of space.
Yeah.
Without having to noodle and noodle and noodle. So that's always been sort of a driving force behind my art.
I just can't stop thinking about your brand now, not your brand, the aesthetic of all of this. When you tell me that was your profession, now it all comes to light.
Right.
And I can see, like, the powerful silhouettes of these different characters and the colors that you chose to, like, fully either contrast or represent what seems like most likely parts of their character.
Yes.
Cannot wait to read the book. This is the hardest part, is that I've been so busy at the convention I haven't had time to read the book. So.
Sure. Well, I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. Forthcoming on ProjectNerd.com, the review for issue number one. And I really look forward to the trade paperback. So do you have... If the trade paperback is forthcoming, are you on issue six right now?
Oh, no. The trade paperback is available. It is available online.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we're mainly trying to push today. So the first issue is just out there because, for some people, they may not necessarily want to invest $20 in a book. So I just try to give them a little taste. And I think the first issue turned out really well. So
absolutely. I'm super excited to review it and really spend some time, because talking to you, especially about 1 minute ago when you started describing the buzzwords for this,
sure.
My mind just started kaleidoscoping in so many directions.
That's the goal, man. When I first started this story, it was the main driving force for me to actually create it. I find that there's a lot of things that are just disharmonic in our society. So
absolutely.
I wanted to explore those things and to try to figure out, alternatives, and I feel like I have found some really profound, revelations and answers, and I wanted to try to convey that to other people. But one of the things I found in trying to do that is a lot of times it goes completely over their head and it's hard for them to really understand what I'm getting at,
Absolutely.
So what I decided is, well, what if I try to create a comic book story that could translate that information in a simpler way, in a way that they don't necessarily even realize they're learning at the same time as being entertained. So,
see, that's what makes you a genius, because you're following in the steps of the greats.
Word, but sure, thank you.
If you can figure out a way to really communicate a powerful message that you genuinely care about, and in your heart, that's something that you need to share with people.
That's how I feel.
That is the coal that turns into the diamond of something amazing.
Well,
and I keep hearing these little like tidbits that I consider coal, where you're like, no, I've thought about this universe. This was in my head years ago.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I've given this thing incredible amount of thought.
That should make anyone listening right now as excited as I am.
Well,
because
I hope
that really means a lot of care was put into that world, and I'm excited to see it expand. One thing, It immediately makes me, it evokes my favorite sci-fi or my favorite comic books, where X-Men and Star Trek have been these allegories to really either people like me willingly accept it. I want to think about things in new ways, or sometimes they trick people into thinking about things they're uncomfortable about or they never even thought about.
Right.
And that those kinds of stories are sincerely what changed my life.
Sure,
and
sure.
I throw those examples out because X-Men and the Star Trek The Next Generation laid down a majority of my moral fiber and filled in the gaps that my friends and parents didn't help me with.
Sure,
means the world to me to see someone else that's equally as passionate, that wants to inspire and influence people, not only just telling them, be a good person, but really think about things and think about, like, opening your mind and take just a step back up, maybe out of your window of comfort. And there's other ways to look at things.
Exactly. Ask questions. Challenge.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And it's a pleasure to meet another creative type who really thinks that way.
Well, thank you.
Because their art comes in all forms, but finding something that is really made not only with care to the design of the art, but real care and passion in the idea that all of this wasn't manifested because you needed to keep yourself busy, not because you just needed fun new things to draw, but and not even solely because you wanted to entertain people, but inside you, something that makes you really special. There are things you are thinking about that you need to share with people. And I know there are people out there that need to hear them and want to hear them. And knowing that you have put yourself out there is inspiring.
Well,
like,
thank you. I can't
say that enough, because it could be so easy. Like, a leaf could have blown one day and you would have just never been at Denver Comic Con.
That's true.
And
that's true.
That's what I think everybody that comes to the con should be really value, is the special people that show up. And I'm always scared I'm not going to see you next year. I'm not going to see these really brilliant people sure. that I know make this con what it is.
Absolutely.
Special.
Yeah, it's been a great, great weekend for me. I can't wait to come back next year and just can't wait to see what I got cooking.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
It means the world to me finding really special people that not just are a part of the con community, but that are part of the fans of art and the fans of literature that somehow have combined to become comic books. And you're sharing the thing that makes you you.
Cool.
And I hope that I get to watch that evolve, and I hope that other people get to spend the 20 minutes that I have to get to know you just this well, because if they do, they will never stop being interested in what you have to say.
Well, thank you for all your kind words. I really appreciate it.
Mr. Dave, yes. Do you have a social media presence?
Yes, I do. All of my handles are Atlas Is Coming. So you can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And it's also atlasiscoming.com is the main website.
That's called branding.
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you again. And if anybody needs to find him, and if you're not thinking about it, you better type that into your URL right now. Your web browser, direct it there immediately, my friends. But until next time, please stay tuned to the website for the review of Atlas Origins, and I will bring more interviews from the Denver Comic Con floor straight into your earballs. Hey, everybody, this is Jesse Wind here with ProjectNerd.com, and I have a really special interview with a local creator who's brought his first completed published story to Comic-Con. It is called Handicape, and I'm going to dive in deep and work my way around to figure out how he ended up in the video game industry, what inspired this really original comic idea, and what plans that he might have in the future, because this is the first Comic-Con that he's been to show off the hard work that he's been doing the last few years. And I'm really excited to see what that might amount to in the future. So let me start by asking you, are you a writer or an artist?
Writer.
A writer.
I'm a writer.
I know this. I just have to make sure everybody else does. Your first year at Denver Comic Con, you're coming in, and I come to the table, and you have a few books on the table.
Yeah.
You have your own publishing company?
Yeah.
And what were you working on originally before you had the idea to get into comic books?
Apps. Software developer.
Software development. Yes. Is that what you went to school for?
No, I didn't go to school.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's even more inspirational.
Yeah.
I had heard earlier talking to you that you were in South America. How did you end up working in South America?
Yeah, so instead of going to school, when I graduated high school, I decided I wanted to move abroad. So I moved to South America. I moved to Lima. And I lived with a local family there to learn Spanish, and I taught computers at a school.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's really, really... That's something that people think about a lot and normally aren't brave enough to do.
Yeah.
So congratulations on having the heart to really try something risky and make sure, like, I'm really happy that it amounted to something great.
Yeah.
So you were working on software development. Where did that really start? What kind of apps did you start developing before you decided to kind of move abroad and see what else you might want to work on?
Well, I started abroad. I started by teaching at that school. I was teaching computer classes, which led to a request to make software for the school.
Oh, okay.
I played around with different software projects before. And then when I got there, they're like, hey, what about our grading stuff? What about our behavior stuff and attendance stuff?
Oh, wow.
And so I started writing that for them. And then when I came back to the U.S., I just started doing it for school districts.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Because for a software engineer, metrics, that's what it's all about. You're like, you need numbers? I got numbers. That's really cool. I like the entrepreneurial spirit of you seeing, like, firstly, just being risky. Going to another country is honestly very, very brave of you. And learning another language in a new country is really something that you should be proud of. Because it's not... You should be very proud of. And then seeing an opportunity and taking it has clearly taken you places. And it's really interesting because you are a prime example of taking risks and them really, like, turning out well. And after you started working on software for schools stateside, where did that lead you after that?
Well, it started out with web software, but then when the iPad came out, it was kind of the new thing, and everybody wanted a piece of that. So it turned into, like, iPad software, same kind of thing, school software for
Absolutely.
iPads. Yeah, take a second here. Put it all. Put the timeline together in my mind.
Absolutely,
it's all blurred together.
That's what happens when you work really, really hard.
Yeah.
One skill rolls into another, and one handshake turns into another meeting, and all of a sudden you have a comic book here.
That's what it was. I went back down to visit my friends in Peru, and I had these iPads, and I was like making apps. I said, these are awesome. And people were saying, hey, we're going to start seeing books on these iPads. And then my friend says, hey, I made a comic book, and I'd like to publish it in the U.S., but it wasn't working out. I said, well, why don't we publish it on the iPad? And so it was kind of that serendipitous collection of everything happening all at once.
Absolutely. And I really love, I've been talking to creators all day about what a wonderful avenue the internet has become. App stores and any opportunity to interact directly with your fan base and be able to cut out a distributor or any middleman that's going to obscure the message that you're really trying to convey.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people that want to read these really unique stories, but it's hard for a creator to get somebody to really help them. If you have something super unique, that ends up being risky. And a lot of people aren't willing to take the risk if they're not positive they're going to get a return. So it makes me really happy that, one, you could help your friend, but two, that all creators now are starting to get a better, like, direct avenue, like a channel to speak to their audience and
right.
make sure that the things that they really want to make get seen by the people who really want to see them.
Yeah. It's really opened up.
So he came to you and was having a really hard time trying to get someone to treat him fairly to make a deal to publish this.
Yeah.
And you came back with, we could turn this into an app. Did you have any difficulties beginning that process?
I made the app. It was looking good. And then I went to submit it to Apple. And they said, well, you can't just submit one book. That's a book, not an app. And so I said, okay, well, what do I do now?
Put a moving picture on it.
Yeah, put a moving picture
now
and some music.
So what did you end up going the route of publishing that as an ebook, or how did you end up publishing that?
So what I did then is I took a step back and I said, well, what am I going to need next? I said, obviously, they said one book isn't enough. I guess I need more books.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working on more books.
Did you begin writing your own ideas, or were you searching for more creators at that point?
Yeah, so my friend, he and I are both writers. We like to write together. That's kind of where we connected. And so I had some stuff, you know, brewing in the back of my mind, some stories I'd already written, and we started talking about turning those into some comics too and kind of expanding what we had available. And then some of his friends who were also making some comic books in South America, we talked to them, and they said, hey, why don't we bring these to the United States in English and see what kind of audience we find there?
Absolutely. And that's brilliant of you to look for more creators in South America, because more and more recently with the I don't know how to put it correctly into words, the internet making the nerd community such a global open community, the talent that has been hiding away in all these underrepresented countries are really starting to come to the top.
Yeah.
We're starting to get some amazing artists and writers and colorists from South America, Brazil and Peru that I'd never heard of, I'd say 5 years ago. And now there's some of the top pencilers and colorists around.
Right.
And it's cool to see. It's unfortunate when you accidentally get put in a bubble and all the people around you are pushing very similar content and media made by very similar people with very similar worldviews.
Right.
And I recently read a book by someone that apparently is an amazing famous author in China, but they just got their stuff translated over into English. And I think it's so intriguing how many more books and comics there have to be out there that are amazing, but I haven't been able to find them because they're having such a hard time either getting it translated or getting it published over here.
Yeah, it can be hard to break in, and then even when you do break in, you're competing with everybody else and,
mm-hmm.
and existing like tastes and everything, and you try to redefine what a comic book could look like.
Absolutely. The yin and yang of that direct channel to your audience on the internet
exactly.
is also, they might be overstimulated by everybody pushing everything.
Right.
How many years ago did you start, or no, let me try. How many years ago did that app end up beginning? Or, I can't even say it. When did you get the app published, because you had to go find some more creators to add more books? So
yeah.
When was that finalized?
So actually, instead of publishing the app, I decided we were going to publish print. And so we're going to start by printing some books and distributing them in person, like at conventions.
Wonderful.
Or selling them online. And so we have yet to come back to making the app for all of our books. And I don't know how many I want, probably a dozen before I come back and say, here's a full app that you should download.
Absolutely. So that's really, really cool that you began with the idea being software, and then it ended up being physical, because a lot of times I hear ideas do the opposite, yeah, because they haven't been able to figure out how to get it published in financially profitable enough situation, because they can't do 10,000 books or enough for it to help them, honestly. And some people they love what they're working on so much that they're willing to take the risk, but if it doesn't pay off, then that's why it's called a risk. It's so hard to really take that first dive. It was really nice to walk up to your table, and when you told me that Handicaped was your first book, I was really surprised to see there were four or five other books on the table. So are these all creators that are now under your publishing brand?
Right. So two of the different books are the ones that came from Argentina. There's another publisher, Loco Rabia. And then
books called?
One of them is Pending Issues. It's a collection of short stories about a detective that solves people's pending issues. One of them is Gladiator, about a guy who's in an insane asylum who believes that he is a gladiator. And those ones are great. All of the books right now are different artists, and with the exception of the ones that I've worked on, different writers.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got the first one that I actually worked on. That was The Lost City. It's the first of three books, and I worked on that one with my buddy, the one who I originally was going to make the app for.
Mm-hmm.
He and I worked together to write it, and then found an illustrator here in the United States, actually. And then my next one was Chico X. It's about a young guy who's kind of like a savage, grows up in the wild, almost like Tarzan meets Zorro.
Oh, wow.
And so those are the ones that I have on the table right now. And I recently picked up another local artist, and I'm publishing her work. And she's got one called Nor, and she's doing that also as a webcomic. And we have the prologue right now, but that's going to be a big, long, epic one.
Ooh, that's really, really cool. Yeah. So we accidentally danced around the title of your production company.
Yeah. So it's Red Tempest, Red Tempest Media, Red Tempest Studios, depending on what we're working on.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a social media presence with your company, or is it the creators hold their own social media presence?
Yeah, it's mostly the creators. I'm out there a little bit, but I'd love to have more of a presence of social media.
Absolutely. Well, I guess we'll remind them at the end, but do you do Twitter or Instagram more? Do you where can people find you the most easy, like Facebook?
Yeah. Facebook is probably the first place, and then Twitter after that. I'll be really active on Twitter when something's coming up, and then I won't say anything for a long time.
Me too. I feel quite the same way. Yeah. How can they find you on Facebook?
It's facebook.com/redtempest.
Wonderful.
Or Red Tempest Media. I don't know.
I understand the struggles.
Find me at redtempest.net. That's where you'll find everything.
That's the best.
Yeah.
Do you have all copies of your books and everything available on redtempest.net?
Yeah, we do. Absolutely.
Awesome. So we've worked through a little bit of history of you coming up through software development, traveling the world, meeting some really creative people, being an entrepreneur, taking the risk to start your own company. Out of curiosity, do you have much more of a background in comics? Did you grow up reading comics, or were you more into video games, or maybe neither? What was your biggest interest growing up?
Literature. So, I mean, a younger kid, maybe Mark Twain, or maybe stories of Robin Hood or something like that.
Very cool.
And then growing up with, Steinbeck was always a big one for me, Hemingway. and then it wasn't until I was living in Peru, actually, that I started reading comic books. My friend had a collection of old Batman in Spanish, and that was my introduction to comics.
That's so awesome. You read his in Spanish?
Yeah, started his in Spanish. Yeah.
That's so epic, because I hear so many stories of either people who've migrated over from another country. The first story that comes to mind is the owner of Mile High Comics, Chuck Rosansky. He came over from Germany with his mother when he was a little boy. And that's how he learned how to speak English, is she would buy him comic books. And I think I might need to pick up some Spanish Batman myself, to be honest.
Yeah.
That might help me a little bit. So I think that's something that I respect a lot, is you have a respect for traditional literature. And I think I really like knowing where the creators I appreciate, or that I like, come from, because the comics that are the stories that you will tell me are not going to be the same thing as another artist who grew up reading Ninja Turtles and right. Spider-Man and Goosebumps. That's not even a name. But so yeah, that because I honestly didn't know that about you until just now. That makes me really, really intrigued of the like the content of the plots of your comics, because a lot of people don't advertise that. Not that they're ashamed of it or anything. They just don't advertise like, yeah, I've read a lot of traditional, like, old school literature, which sets a really positive precedent and a good perspective on writing. Because if you only read the books that your teachers ask you to in school, right. and then the books you want to read, that isn't a good representation of where the English language has come from and where it's going and where ideas have come from, so that you can create your own spins on them that are really original and you really understand the source of where that came from. So that makes me even more excited about bringing this conversation back around to the newest book, the one that the logo caught my eye, caught Mr. Iggy's eye from Project Nerd the most, Handicaped.
Handicaped.
When did you begin working on this project?
Handicaped started about 4 years ago now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What was the idea, or where did that come from, or what cup of coffee sparked this?
Well, it was a late night. I was with my friend. He's in a wheelchair. I was driving him. We're going to a superhero movie. I don't remember which one, so it must not have been very good. We're going to a superhero movie together, and at some point, something looked like he was wearing a cape. I said, "Hey, that's a handy cape." And it was a good joke, you know, between the two of us. And I said, "Well, I'll be your sidekick legs, and we'll see where it goes." And it kind of just sat there for about a year, kind of germinating in my mind. And that was kind of the start of it. And then we just started getting together. I was like, hey, maybe this could actually be a story. And so we'd go grab some drinks, talk about it, come up with some ideas. And eventually I put it down on the paper and found an artist.
That's really amazing. So when I first walked by your booth, Handicaped is a really provocative title. I think evocative might have been the word I was trying to use.
It depends on what you want to.
Yeah.
I want to suggest.
Saucy. So when I walk by your booth and I read Handicaped, it immediately starts my mind racing about what this could be, what the potential of this hero is, if they really have superpowers or if they're just super genius and they help people that way.
Yeah.
And the first thing that really made me genuinely interested is I've never seen a superhero in a wheelchair before, very specifically. And even when a studio goes out of their way because they would like to show they're being accepting of problems people might have, they go, oh, we have a blind superhero now,
right.
or this one has one arm. But that's it. And it's not like, oh, Daredevil's like kick-ass superhero buddy, his team. It's Iron Fist and Luke Cage, Daredevil, and the Handicaped. For some reason, we've not ended up there.
Right.
And that's... honestly, in another unique way, that's a risk for you to take.
It is.
How did you think about that before publishing it at all? Like, if it would be risky trying to make a superhero that people might misunderstand or on a shallow level maybe misinterpret and go like, oh, this isn't for me. I'm not going to give this a chance.
Yeah, you know, I try not to think about it. I just wanted to make an interesting story, and I thought, what's more interesting than a guy who's in a wheelchair mm-hmm. but is a superhero? I thought that's just an interesting setup. That's where it started from there. I didn't really think about it a lot. It probably would have been bad to think too much about it.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't let it dissuade you.
No.
So
my first question to myself then was, so what kind of superpower would this guy have that would be relevant to the struggles of being bound to a wheelchair?
That's a really good way to put it. Instead of just going like, what superhero power would he have?
Right.
And then narrowing that list of 10 down. What did you... I really like that thought process. So take me down that route just a little bit.
Well, for the longest time, I thought, well, maybe he'll be like Batman. He doesn't have a superpower. He just like pimps out his ride and puts a bunch of technology on it. And then through that, maybe he's able to be like a rolling computer hacker. And so that's kind of where it started. I thought, oh, a guy in a wheelchair, he'd do pretty well with a computer. You know, and my buddy, you know, this is inspired off of, he loves his computers, and it just kind of fit in my mind. But then I thought, well, if I take it a little bit further, you know, what kind of power would be related to computers and technology? And so that's kind of what it ended up being, is his ability to control computers and technology.
Wow, nice. So now that you have given the secret away, what's the pitch that you usually bring to people that like me that come up and go, this is really interesting. What is Handicaped?
Yeah. So I start by saying, this is Ethan. He's the guy in the wheelchair because he's on the poster and everybody usually asks about that. So I say, this is the guy who's, he's an office worker. He's kind of bored with life. He's a little bit upset because the way he thought his life was going to go ended up going completely different direction. And little could he have known that it was because there was a conspiracy going on around him, where other people knew that he had powers and he didn't. And so this world is something that he can't make sense of. And the story of Handicape is where he starts to figure out that conspiracy, and through the process kind of reunite with his friends that he'd lost touch with over the years.
I want to read it so badly right now. So let's see. Sorry, my mind is just running wild because I really, now I just need to read the comic book and come back for part two.
Yeah.
When did you get the comic published? Did you get it ready for this convention, or have you had it ready for previous?
Yeah, so I finished. It took a lot longer working with the artist and getting it written than I had hoped, mm-hmm. Which is why it's been about 4 years. And I got it finished just a couple months ago, but wasn't able to get it printed in time for the convention, so I don't actually have any books here. But I should have them within the next month, which is like, you know, July or August of this year.
Absolutely. So regularly, since I'm not going to be able to see you at Comic-Con too soon, if we're on your website, do you have a store up with your books?
I do.
Wonderful.
So you can start by handicapehero.com. That's where you can read a lot of the story, and you can also find a link to the store, which will be redtempest.net.
A genius.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And then redtempest.net will have all the books for sale, as well as things like T-shirts and posters.
That's so cool. I'm really, really glad that you got a sample of that up on the website.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are going to check that out now. I can't ask any questions about the comic. And you gave a good tease, and all I want to do is go read it. Do you have any other projects that you're... I'm trying to think. I don't want to spoil anything. I'm just so... Can't spoil anything ever. What are your future plans, really, for your company? Are you still looking in South America for possibly more creators, or have you opened up to just... accepting solicits from creators? Do you have a project you're working on that you are soliciting for creators, or do you have an idea what you want your publishing company to be doing in the next couple of years?
I've got a couple of ideas. We're not really, you know, I don't really take submissions. I don't know what I would do with submissions if I took them.
Absolutely.
I try to focus on one project at a time. We're
very
small.
Cool.
This isn't everything that I do, so that tends to be enough.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple of projects in the pipeline and a couple of people I'm talking to right now. My goal right now is to work on something with somebody local, because it's great to work with these people in Argentina, but I'd love to try to do something a little bit more personal, a little bit more hands-on.
Absolutely. That's really cool. So you said right now running this publishing company and working with all these creators isn't your only job. What do you do to keep the lights on?
Yeah.
Are you still working in software these days?
So I still write software. Yep, I do contract work for web and video games.
Ah, nerds shall rule the world. Your phones would be dead without him. That's really cool. I'm personally very inspired, and I'm sure a lot of other people that will hear this story are too, to see that it is something, somebody that has a full-time job and is working really hard just to be a regular adult can also very truly take the risk and their extra time and make it amount to something that they can be really proud of.
Right.
And a lot of people are scared to take that leap sometimes because maybe I don't have enough time, or maybe I don't have enough money, or what happens if I fail? And I always tell people, don't be afraid to fail. Like, that is the number one thing with even playing video games. Like, you got to learn in life that it's okay to just not be perfect, and it's okay to fail. But if you work your hardest and you find the right people to work with you, it can really amount to something beautiful, especially when the relationship between like writers or creators, or even if you have good friends that edit your work, people who like love you or appreciate you, they see the best within you, and they understand the things you do the best when you work. And I love, like, I'm sure your team helps you with this. Do you have people look at your writing before to, like, help you workshop things?
Yeah, so there's a number of either everything from beta readers to, you know, other editors in the process, depending on the project.
Mm-hmm. I love when you have your good friends that know your strengths, they can really help amplify your strengths.
Right.
Because sometimes it's hard, especially when you're a humble person, to recognize the things that you're the best at or the things that people love about you the most. And I'm really glad that you've, like, had the opportunity to do that, and it seems like you have some supportive friends. It also seems like you inspire your friends a little bit, because without you, I don't think a lot of their dreams would have come to fruition or have been accomplished as quickly.
That's definitely the hope, is to be able to build support. You know, everybody can help each other, prop each other up a little bit here and there.
Absolutely. Well, I really, really appreciate your time. I really look forward to see what you do in the future, and I can't wait to get my hands on Handy Cape.
Thanks a lot.
June or July, when I have Handy Caped in my hands, we will have a review forthcoming on projectnerd.com. Again, if you want to find Chad Beninati on Facebook or his publishing company, where can they find you at?
You can find redtempest.net or handicapehero.com.
That's wonderful. And then if they just want to maybe get in touch with you on Twitter, where are you at?
Yes, C is in the letter C, Beninati, Beninati.
Thank you so much. Well, until I'm lucky enough to get to spend some more time with you in the future, and until I'm lucky enough to have Handy Caped in my hands, I sincerely appreciate your time. I'm really proud of you, and I know that with our fans listening to this interview, there's going to be people that you inspire. So I hope that maybe they can make it to Denver Comic Con sometime and talk to you about hearing this interview or reading your books and how it might have affected their lives.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd
people
be
like you are what make the comic book industry go around. So thank you so much for working as hard as you do and being brave enough to write the things that other people haven't, and to make sure that the world hears the ideas that you have in your head.
Yeah, thanks for the interview.
It was my pleasure. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your con, and I promise I will get a hold of you as soon as I can get Handy Caped in my hands.
Sounds great. I'll let you know.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
Hey, everybody, this is Jesse Wynn coming at you from the floor of Comic-Con with Project Nerd, for Project Nerd, with the Incredible Art Gallery. I have two very special people with me today, the owner of the Incredible Art Gallery, Mr. John McIntyre.
Howdy doody.
And one of the most beautiful painters I have ever had the honor of meeting in real life, a Mr. Christopher Clark.
He said, I'm a beautiful painter. I'm so beautiful. Thank you. I combed my hair and everything. I took a shower.
I almost thought he was a male model. I saw him over there singing the Beatles.
I'm very professionally good looking.
I 100% agree with that.
And he paints pretty good, too.
That's what brings the face brings people into the gallery. And then he's like, but look at the art, honey, the art. So to start off, where is the Incredible Art Gallery located?
We are in the heart of downtown Denver. We are between 16th Street and the Theater District at 1020 15th Street. So we're kind of right in the middle of everything.
You could practically throw a comic book at it from the convention center.
You actually could. Yeah, we're two blocks from here. Makes it real easy.
That's wonderful. Does your gallery specialize in any certain kind of art?
We do. We specialize in licensed. From Star Wars, licensed art, Star Wars, Marvel, DC Comics, Disney. And then we've got a lot of surrealism and just a lot of Christopher's fine art.
That's really beautiful, because it's hard to find non-traditional galleries are something I have a hard time finding. Even though I know Broadway has tons of them, there's nothing that seems really friendly and open for, like, the general community. The people that come to Comic-Con don't expect to just drive down to Broadway and find a really inviting art gallery. But if I told one of my friends, the Incredible Art Gallery downtown is full of Star Wars and Marvel and all those things that you've grown up with and loved, that would be really, it would be less, yeah, hard to believe and less threatening. So they would really want to go. And they're not like, oh, an art museum. Like, I don't know what kind of art they would ever have.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. We get people coming in every day and said, I've never seen a gallery like this in my life. And it's, you know, they're hooked. It's such an unusual place to find so much awesome pop culture stuff that, like, we all grew up with. You know, that's now become fine art. You know, it's cool. It's really unique.
It's special that there's someone that is so talented that really people with the talent who say that this is fine art and prove it and make beautiful pieces that can be respected or can be looked at and analyzed by other artists. And it's not just, oh, look, this is a Photoshop filter put on a Star Wars picture and now it's a poster.
Right.
So I heard from that you don't do any digital work. Is that true?
That's correct. I should come from a fine art background doing oil painting traditionally. My favorite era of artist is from the 1800s. Every time I see a new guy that I love, he's from that era. I love the Barbizon school in France. I love the Fontainebleau painters. I love the Impressionist movement. I love the American Hudson River painters. That's just my era that I really connect with, and that's kind of where my background is. And I learned how to oil paint, painting those kinds of subjects in that style. And now I translate that into a contemporary genre of, like, doing sci-fi, pop culture, fantasy, surrealism, that kind of thing. And it's a really cool crossover. And it's not something that apparently many people have ever seen before, because I keep getting told how unique it is and how different it is from everyone else out there, which I'm very honored that people like my work and they say it's different and say it's unique and they say it's good. I mean, it's sometimes, you know, as an artist, you spend your whole life studying and practicing and producing work and getting your ideas out there. And you hope you're good. You never know. Your mom tells you you're good. Sure, your stuff's, you know, hanging on the fridge. But it's finally cool to, like, to hear people who are really serious fans say that they love my stuff. And that's, you know, we got licensed with Star Wars and Marvel, which means that, you know, yes, George Lucas has seen my paintings and he likes them. So, like, that's really cool. But I think it's cooler to have, like, just fans, like regular people say, I've grown up watching Star Wars and your stuff, like, really moves me. I'm like, that's fabulous. You know, I'm so happy for that.
Absolutely. That's something I think is one of the most special things about this community. And it makes me really happy that you are now a part of this community where you can get direct feedback and see how your art really affects people and get and really communicate with the people that you're trying to painting and making a piece of art like that. You're really putting yourself out there, but also putting part of the way you see the world into that. And that's something that you don't usually get to share with people very often unless you take the risk to be an artist or a creative person and put that stuff out there. Do you ever paint and attend your gallery shows when they show your art to communicate with your fans?
Oh, definitely. I do a lot of live painting at the Incredible Art Gallery, actually. And, of course, I was working on a Deadpool piece here at Comic-Con. And people, one thing I'm discovering also, it's really rare to see an artist actually come out and paint in front of people. And I'm like, I've been doing it for years, and I don't mind it at all. I can talk to people, and I can socialize and explain what I'm doing. And, you know, sometimes I don't get as much work done as I could if I'm just hunkered down in my studio. But then, I come to a show to be with people and hang out, and so people can have the experience of watching art come to life in real life, because no one ever sees it. You see a lot of finished paintings. You see a lot of images online. You know, so much social media and imagery everywhere, and people are living through their phone. But when you see an actual oil painting, you know, you can smell the mineral spirits, and you can smell oil paint and watch someone making real brush strokes on a real, like, gessoed wood panel. That's something that's kind of a rare gift I'm discovering, because that's what they tell me. I'm like, well, crap, I'll do it more often.
Oh, yeah, it's really rare to see anything that honestly isn't, unless you go out of your way to go to a real art gallery, to find something that's not just printed on canvas. And you got to get, if you're not a trained eye, people like me have to get up really close to make sure, oh, no, that's definitely printed on the canvas. It would have been really nice to see what that had originally looked like. But even scanning certain things, you lose the texture and the detail of the paint and the brush strokes. And something I, as a layman, really appreciate seeing painting like that is the texture of the paint on the canvas. It's really interesting and really brings it alive.
One thing that's cool that we do with the Incredible Art Gallery, we do live shows there where if you want to purchase a print of one of the pieces that I've done, I will actually embellish it with real paint on the canvas chiclé or on the print, so that you can kind of get the best of both worlds. It's a more affordable piece that, you know, most people can afford and put in their house and really love and enjoy. But then I'm actually adding paint to it, so you get the real paint texture.
And it's done by Christopher. A lot, you know, there are a few publishers that'll do it where it's a hired hand that'll do it, and it's not the actual artist doing it. So the fact they can watch Christopher do it if they can, and we do a lot of, you know, live, even web feeds sometimes, so they can see the actual art being done. So the fact the artist is doing it and that he's actually can communicate effectively and is
absolutely
fun guy with a decent personality, you know, and this talent, it's pretty awesome.
It's a little bit, the like, when I see something like that, it demystifies art a little bit, because when you do only see it through a phone or on the computer, it's like trying to say, what, seeing the Mona Lisa on Google Images is just like going to see it in real life.
Right.
And I probably said this off air, but seeing beautiful art really is mesmerizing. And it's, especially for someone who doesn't create, you have made something of nothing. You have techniques that are magic to laymen. And that's something that that amazement only enhances the beauty and really gives gives me and other people a respect for seeing you do what you do. Because it is rare to see a real artist really painting in front of you and not just going like, no, I promise he did that at some time. At some point, that was made.
No, it's definitely like, it is like a magic show. And for me, it's something I've been doing for so long. It's, you know, I kind of forget how much people love it and appreciate it. I'm like, yeah, I'm just doing this thing. Even if I'm just doodling or, you know, I'm like cleaning my brushes and people are coming over. Wow, what are you working? I'm like, I haven't even done anything yet. But it's just so, it is such a spectacle to see somebody painting live. And then if they actually, they'll watch me start a painting and it's just a bunch of smears and blobs. And they come back an hour later and it's starting to take shape. And they see it maybe in the gallery like the next day I'm working on it. Like, oh my God, I watched that thing come together out of nothing. And it is really a magic show. I might as well be David Copperfield, you know, making the Statue of Liberty disappear or something.
That's how it feels for me.
I'm happy to do it because people seem to really like it. And, you know, I find it a great privilege to be a professional fine artist. It's something that I've been dreaming about since I was a little kid. I've been interested in art, and I've identified as an artist since I was a little kid. So I really appreciate that I am a fine artist for a living. It's been taking a lot of work and a lot of years to get to this point. So I want to use that to its full extent. I don't want to just sit in my studio with all the doors closed, hiding away, and like a hermit making paintings, and they secretly get released into the world. Like, I want to be out there. Like, put me to work. Like, come see a show. I'll be out painting. I'll be out signing stuff. I'm doing Comic-Cons. Marvel is flying me to Comic-Con in July in San Diego. Like, awesome. I'll be there signing stuff, and, you know, hopefully I can bring some stuff to work on and meet people, and I go do shows at Incredible Art Gallery, and, you know, I do whatever I can to put myself out there, and, like, I want to work hard for what I've earned, because, you know, I think that's what people want, you know?
Absolutely. I really appreciate you both trying to figure out a way to bring fine art to the masses in a way that really resonates with a lot of people our age and even younger. But like I said, at a certain point, unless someone really takes you somewhere special, it can be very intimidating to want to go to an art gallery or to find an art gallery. Or you have preconceived notions of your head because you saw that one episode of that one TV show and it looked really, really scary because they're way fancier than I am. And I don't think I could even say the right things in front of those paintings.
I guess that's one thing. Art tends to get a little pretentious, and being in the more traditional fine art world, that is definitely the vibe there. It's very pretentious. It's very hoity-toity. It's a lot of really strange art that you don't really understand, but you have to pretend like you understand it. And even as an artist, I didn't get it. I thought it was weird. So it's really cool to be painting in a genre that people really get. And, like, you know, our generation grew up with this stuff, and there's a lot of, you know, new generations coming where this is, like, standard art for them. Like, they've been immersed in awesome pop culture, like all these great brands, Star Wars and Disney and Harry Potter and DC Comics. And, you know, it's cool to be a part of that. The people just get it, you know. They see a picture like, oh, my God, those are the TIE Fighters from the new Star Wars movie. Or, holy crap, that's an awesome Iron Man painting. Like, it's stuff that they've connected with for years, and they're super diehard fans. And now it's like a real sophisticated oil painting that, you know, and these people now, they're like, they have, like, great paying jobs and, like, these young tech, you know, executive, like, professional people who are starting to, like, build a cool adult life, and they want, like, cool adult paintings, but they want, like, stuff that really resonates with them, and I can give them that, and it's really fulfilling.
I'm really glad that you kind of combined those two Venn diagrams to really make the middle where we all lie, because I want to feel like an adult that has very nice art that someone tried on and interpreted in a unique way and isn't just a Photoshop filter or a promotional image put on a poster.
Something you bought at IKEA or, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond that's a print, that's some, you know, dorky thing that 20,000 million people have in a hotel lobby or something. It's unique and it's personal to you, but it's still sophisticated and cool.
absolutely, and that's really it, is I want things that resonate with me and the things I've grown up with and the things I love, but is really classy and can be painted in ways that I could have never imagined because I'm not an artist, but I know what I love, and art is magical, and even if sometimes you can't explain, when I look at some of your art, it sends my mind racing, because I'm like, yeah, I know that that's the Millennium Falcon, but the beautiful... like the thoughts that had to go through your mind to create the surroundings of that and the interpretation, that's not a photograph of the Millennium Falcon. That's something wholly original with a filter that is you. And it's really special that you found a partner that saw that within you and can appreciate that and elevate that. Because it really always takes an outside person to get a good perspective on yourself, because sometimes you feel selfish when you're trying to self-analyze and you think like, oh, am I really good at this? I think I'm really good at this. Maybe I shouldn't say I'm really good at this. But when someone comes by and they're a genuine friend, they see into your heart and they see what you care about and what your strengths are. Even if you don't know you have a beautiful smile, he knows you have a beautiful smile. And he'll tell people that. And I today got to learn about a great bond, like a symbiotic relationship you two have, a lot like a writer and an artist work together to elevate one another. You have a partner that has an art gallery, but an art gallery is only one half of the equation, and he needs a partner that makes fine art, and you need an art gallery. You can't just paint and have them all over your house. And I feel very silly that I had never met a painter who could talk to me about what it is to have teamwork and to have someone back you up and be supportive and know the right things to say to the right people so that the talent that you've tried to develop over your whole life can really get seen by the right people and maybe finally lead you somewhere great to be appreciated.
Yeah, it's definitely like, you know, I where I'm going right now is definitely because of John, and I met him through the gallery. And you know, it is a really great team, I think, we're putting together. He's got great staff at the incredible art gallery, and with all the connections that he has, and with the drive, and you know, I can tell he's passionate about my work. That makes me feel good. And that makes me want to work my ass off for him.
And he does.
I know he's working his ass off for me. And it's like, you know, we believe in what we're each other's doing. And I think that is like a publisher and an artist, which is what we are. John is my agent, because he's the one who represented me to all these great brands that we're getting published with. He's my publisher because he's publishing my own pieces that are my own creations. And he's the owner of the gallery that's, you know, has the physical location and all the web presence and the booth that we have here at Comic-Con and putting on all the shows and everything. So he's like the ringleader making it happen. And I'm like, you know, the tiger. I know that's a stupid metaphor, but it's...
you're ferocious and beautiful. And someone had to tame you and bring you out into society.
And one of the things that we're trying to do, too, is getting our fan base involved, too. Because we've seen, I mean, we're between Christopher and I, we're probably memberships of every, you know, geek fan base there is on social media. Mm-hmm. So we'd like to hear what they're talking about, what they're saying and so forth. And one of the things that we're actually doing that we're really excited about is we are going to be launching to our fan base. We want to hear their interpretations. We want to hear their ideas, because we think we have some pretty good ones that we can put to canvas. Mm-hmm. But the fan base and what your listeners are thinking right now, and oh, it'd be so cool to have a painting that depicts this, mm-hmm, or that. Like, what happened in Empire Strikes Back when Lando betrayed, you know,
Han
and Leia and Chewbacca, the doors close, and we don't see him again. What happened behind those closed doors?
Yeah, a lot of stuff had to have happened before he just magically reappears.
Right. And then all of a sudden he's getting tortured and they're in the jail. So what happened in between those? I'll bet your listeners could probably have some brilliant ideas that even George Lucas, if it went to canvas and he sees all these, where he'd be like, oh, that's brilliant. You know, and we think we're pretty good at some of that stuff, but we probably can't compare to what your listeners and their imaginations, too. Because let's face it, we all have great... Anybody listening to this podcast has a great imagination.
That's true.
It takes a village to create a painting.
Yeah, it really does. So we're going to be essentially asking for their input. And, you know, they can reach us on incredibleartgallery.com. You know, they can just message us on that and give us their ideas. And any idea, you know, we'll always write back. But any idea that we like...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, we'll basically figure out who the winner is, who we want to put it to. And maybe we'll do a couple. And then when Christopher puts it to canvas and it gets published,
absolutely.
And obviously whoever generated that idea, we're going to reward them by giving them a free canvas, limited edition canvas that Christopher will personalize and embellish and so forth. That's as a thank you.
That's amazing. I really love seeing like new ingenuitive ways that people are trying to engage the community and make them feel like just like you two are a team in our community of pop, like our pop culture that and art that we love so much. It is also that dichotomy of fans or art people who appreciate art that come into the gallery, and without anybody to look at beautiful paintings, they would all just it would just be us. And I feel like that you having that idea is very empowering for people that maybe don't feel very empowered to be creative. Sometimes it's really scary, and sometimes you hold yourself up to standards that are too high, or maybe you're just not confident you can draw very well. And if like personally, if I won something like that, it would be so flattering for anybody to be able to work with an artist as talented and have
actually have a say in it.
Yeah, and have any say.
I gave them that idea to
absolutely
do that. How cool is that?
That's not something you hear about very often at all. Yeah. And I really like seeing people who care about communicating all around, because the community is all love coming from every direction, and people trying to appreciate art and Star Wars and just be also have conversations with intellectuals who can make classy, fine art of things that they love or speak intellectually about something that they love. And that helps everyone appreciate it even more. And
we don't want to limit it to just the Star Wars stuff, like Marvel, too, because we can do anything with that.
Yeah.
Any characters and situations that, you know, you've always wanted to see together that would just, you know, blow people's minds. You know, we're opening up to everything. And, of course, as we get more brands, we're going to put that out there, too. Anything goes. It's going to be really fun to see what people come up with.
That's really, really amazing. So if somebody wants to send you an idea that they have, again, where's the best place that they could reach you?
They could go to incredibleartgallery.com. We're actually currently setting up a special area they can click on. But
very cool.
It's pretty easy to find. I mean, they could even do the contact us and just say,
absolutely.
Hey, I'd love to throw this idea. Or our Facebook page.
Yeah, is that where you mainly are with your social media presence?
Oh, yeah. We do Facebook, Instagram. We're all
awesome.
Over there. Chris has his site, too.
What better could an Instagram be for an art gallery, everyone?
Exactly.
Please,
but
tease yourself and head on down.
And we'll respond to anybody's, you know, even if they have a general question.
Absolutely.
But we love hearing input. We love hearing whatever it might be, if it's criticism, if it's ideas, if it's, you know, whatever it might be. It's really
thank you for being
really
so welcoming and helping people really, like, when Comic-Con's not around, it feels good to go see beautiful art. And until now, I didn't know that there was a place like the Incredible Art Gallery that I could go. And
yeah,
I really look
cool.
forward to seeing you both very soon.
Yeah, awesome.
Thank you so much. If people would love to find you online or your art or your social media presence, where are you located?
You can just hashtag Christopher Clark Art and you'll find everything.
That was easy enough. This is a simple man with simple branding and he knows what he likes. Well, thank you two very much. It was really special getting to know you, and it was really special having you talk about what you care about so passionately and how you're going to evolve that. It's not just, I open an art gallery and put stuff in it. You're working with big brands, so he has the opportunity to make legal, amazing things that a lot of people, even if they do paint them, are kind of scared to show people sometimes. And that's hard work on your end, too, which is why it's such a beautiful relationship that you can both really elevate one another, because I love art somewhere close to how much you love art, and I can imagine if me not being an artist, it's such a struggle trying to, I almost feel silly sometimes telling someone how much I love this and how much I appreciate it, because at some point I don't feel like an artist and I don't know, are they going to take me seriously? Because it's so scary because I look up to you so much and so many people do. And I see people, like I talked about, kind of come up and see you painting and see your art and they don't know what to say. And they just stare and it's so pretty. And I think everybody should definitely come down to the Incredible Art Gallery to demystify art, to see something really amazing that you don't get to see on a regular basis, and to genuinely learn that all art galleries aren't the same, and there's somewhere really special that you can come to see really amazing art. I'm really, really excited, because like I said, to be an adult and grow up in the times we grew up in, but then have people tell us, that's not adult art, that's not fine art. I'm like, have you seen
that's not real art, that's... Yeah, that's not true anymore.
Thank you for leading the charge to prove that. Because without people like you, me saying it all day doesn't mean anything. But someone with the talent to prove it and to show people, like, you, something I'll end on is, I love hearing your inspirations coming from older, traditional, classic painters, and not just... It's really nice when you grew up reading comics and you wanted to draw comics and you've been drawing superheroes your whole life, but if you come from another kind of illustration, if you came from a branding background or a marketing background or different kinds of traditional painting and anatomy sketching, it brings a whole new perspective in on this kind of art that we all share in, and it makes it... That's something that I, as a non-artist, is also really scary for me to talk to you about, because I don't know about cubism, and I don't know about all these buzzwords I think I should know.
All these isms, you know.
Exactly. But I can appreciate the fact that an educated man is coming with cross-training from another very traditional place and then evolving it to apply it to something amazing now. And I want to thank you both for taking the risks to do what you do, because it is scary to live your dreams, and it's scary to chase something that isn't easily attainable. And you two made it, and you two found each other, and I can only see this getting better and better. And I'm really excited to stop by soon.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for the opportunity, Jesse. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thanks again.
My pleasure, gentlemen. I look forward to seeing you next year at the con, and we'll do something special when you have something to tease at the gallery very soon.
You bet. Looking forward to
it. I'll be at the Comic-Con in July in San Diego. Find me at the Marvel booth. I'll be there with them. So.
Absolutely. And again, make sure you swing by the enormous Marvel booth in San Diego. They traditionally have sometimes even more than one, so he might be filming at the big filming booth, or he might be sitting there.
Wow.
Yeah, sometimes they'll sneak you away and there's a giant red wall that says Marvel on it, and they'll do this.
I've never done this before, so I'm kind of scared. I don't know what to expect.
Everybody's going to love you. It's just very... It looks like the Times Square sidewalk all the time at Artist Alley.
Crap. Okay, that sounds fun.
Other than that, just drink lots of water, and I think you're going to enjoy yourself. But anybody that's lucky enough to come out to San Diego Comic-Con, you need to make sure you find Mr. Christopher Clark at the Marvel booth, please and thank you. Everybody local to Denver, swing by and see me or see Mr. John McIntyre at the Incredible Art Gallery down in Denver.
Woo-hoo!
Woo! Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Oh, it's
awesome. I appreciate your time.
Thanks.
It's Jesse Wynn for Project Nerd, and if you're looking for any more wonderful interviews with interesting independent creators, writers, and artists, please tune into our RSS feed.